It's your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC for 20 great years has the best OTR on our live streaming. And continue tuning in to the Radio Book Channel, along with the RTC Music Channel, all at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
Welcome one and all to the weekly download, where we play some of the finest old-time radio there is out there. Today's no exception. We're going to have an episode of Inner Sanctum, Life in Your Hands, and something that the Great Gildersleeve did after the Great Gildersleeve. I'll explain that later. Right now, let's try out Inner Sanctum and The Switch.
Good evening, friends of the creaking door. This is your host to welcome you once again into the Inner Sanctum. Come on in, and never mind looking back over your shoulder. Whatever it is that's behind you can't be half as bad as what's in front. As the man whose throat had just been made the scene of an experiment with a razor while he slept said, I'm going from bed to hearse. All right. Settle down now. It's coming. And there's nothing you can do about it. Just keep a good hold on yourself and your wife if your life insurance paid off. Joe Harris. 21, wearing a cheap blue serge suit and a thin top coat, cold and wet on a cold and rainy night, decides to make a change.
Kansas City's okay, but there's nothing there for me. I gotta get out. My wardrobe ain't built for a hard winter, so I figure it could be more comfortable on the coast, California. But I ain't paying for rail transportation this year, so I head for the KC freight yards. And I pick me out a nice long freight job that happens to have an empty car. And pull the sliding door over. Leaving just a crack for air and finger hole for when we reach the land of oranges. The old boiler up front's got the steam up. And we're off. I relax. All I gotta do is let a couple of days slide by and... Sunshine. Hey. What? I didn't notice nobody else was in the car.
Didn't you now, Pally?
No.
That's too bad.
He leaned back into the darkness of his corner so I couldn't see him very good. He was a young guy, maybe my age, maybe a couple of years older. My size, too. Same color hair and eyes. Almost close enough to be brothers, but there was something in his eyes that had never been in mine. I was scared.
You know something funny? You look like me.
Yeah, I kind of noticed that myself in a...
Why?
Well, lots of guys look a little like each other.
No.
I mean... Huh?
Nobody looks like me.
Well, okay, so I don't.
You're trying to. That means you must be one of...
One of what?
They have ways of changing their appearance. You're one of them. You can't fool me.
Look, I don't know what you're talking about.
It's no use. You can't fool me. I'll have to punish you.
Hey, watch out with that knife.
I'm going to cut the resemblance away and find out what you really look like.
You're crazy. Stop it.
Let go of my hand. I've got to cut you away.
No. I got your arm twisted. And the knife is pointing at your heart. Now drop it.
No, or... nobody's as strong as me. I'll...
Stop it. I warn you. Stop it.
No.
Then I got to do this.
No.
I told you. Dead. Hey. No, he's dead. I've got to get out. the door. Slide it open. But the odd bolts.
Another one of these sliding doors. Why don't they snap a proper? Give me a hand, Charlie.
Okay.
You locked it. Now I can't get out. I can't get out. So there I was, locked in with him, in the dark. He was dead, so I wasn't afraid of him. At first, I even gave him a going over. His eyes were open, but I flopped him over, and I went through his pockets. Just a couple of bucks and some small change, and his draft card. Funny, he was 4F, just like me. His name was Martin Pell. That's a laugh, too, finding out who a guy is after you kill him. Kill him? Yeah, I was a murderer. I just realized it. They'll hang me for that. No, it was self-defense, but what chance have I got of proving that? Me with a record, too. But maybe I can lose that record. Maybe. Yeah. So I switched draft cards with him. And now he's Joe Harris, and I'm Martin Pell. Martin Pell of, that says on his card, of Wisey, Oklahoma. And the hours go by, and I'm there with him locked in a boxcar, and the wheels keep pounding underneath, and he's dead. I gotta get out. There's gotta be a way. The door. Shut. I gotta think. Think. Hey, wait. We're stopping. Now what? We're stopping. Yeah, he's covered up. Maybe they won't spot him. Anyways, I gotta get out. I'll yell and I'll pound on the door. Yeah, that's the way. Sure.
Don't you know it's against the law riding a freight?
Yeah, I know.
Or maybe it's a hump you remember.
No.
Now get out of here and get fast.
Fast as I could, I got away from there. The yard bull took a quick look into the car, but he didn't spot the body under the sacking. And the train started up. And it began moving away. With Martin Pell lying under a pile of dirty sacking. With a knife in his heart and a funny look in his eyes. Only, I'm Martin Pell now. It was only a watering stop where the train stopped, so I walked across the prairie, not knowing where I was going and not caring much. Well, I keep walking across the dark face of the land until I spot a light. A couple of lights. A small town, it looked like. A small town. Somewheres. Where? Right on the edge of town, there's a lunch wagon, and it's open. And there's a light shining in it, and I'm hungry. So I go into the lunch wagon. Hi. How about something to eat, huh?
Sure thing, Martin. Sure thing.
What? What did you say?
I said, sure, you're going to have something to eat, Martin. What'll it be?
Martin? What town is this?
Why, you ought to know, Martin. This is Wisey. Wisey, Oklahoma.
Wisey? But
But that's the same place he... It can't be.
Oh, that's no way to talk about your own hometown. Of course, you've been away quite a few years. You look good now.
Wouldn't you say I've changed?
Oh, no more than's natural. Of course, you're only around 16 when you left. Kind of an advanced 16, though.
Yeah?
Ain't many kids of that age would have stuck up the bank, knocked off the night watchman.
I kill him?
Oh, don't get modest, fella. Sure. Old man Henshaw. Hey, I was near forgetting. You said you're hungry.
Not anymore.
Oh, come on, have something to eat. Don't you believe in putting anything in your stomach before doing a job?
Doing a job? Me?
Why do you think I sent for him? Why should I promise you a grand?
I don't remember.
Oh, for Pete's sake, Martin. How many men are you killed that you don't remember a job like this?
Never mind the act. Play it straight, huh?
Okay. Don't get nasty. It's too late to talk business anyway. Come on, I got a room fixed up for you in back. Get a good night's sleep. We'll talk in the morning. About an old man that's lived way past his time. And about how you, gonna take care of that. Martin, I sent for you because I need money.
I ain't got any.
My uncle has. Old man Carew.
I'll get it from him.
When he dies, I will.
So?
So I want him to die.
Oh.
I got a grand in cash. That's yours.
For what?
For my uncle dying a little earlier than expecting.
No dice?
Martin, you take care of old man Carew, or so help me, I'll turn you in on that bank job.
Go ahead. Turn me in. I can prove that I... And then I shut up quick. Blitz was watching me with those little pig eyes in his fat face. Sure, I could prove I wasn't Martin Pell, that I'd never been in Wisey, Oklahoma before in my life. Sure. But to do that, I'd have to admit I was Joe Harris. And when they found that corpse in the boxcar with my draft card on him, that'd be fine. A lot of attention the jury had paid to my plea of self-defense. No witnesses and me on the lam and me switching draft cards in panic. Sure, even the hangman had burst out laughing when he slipped the noose around my neck. I shut up quick, Bliss watching me close. And then I said, "Okay, Bliss, it's a deal. What's the layout?"
I'll pull in here. Trees will cover the car in case anybody happens to be out late on the highway. Can't be too careful. Ain't that so, Martin?
That's so.
It's only a short walk. Let's get going. Here. You better take this.
What? Oh. A tire iron.
I picked it up in a junkyard. They'll never trace it to me.
It's for
old man Carew. They bother you?
I ain't used to them.
Anymore, huh? The house. Old man Carew never believed in buying curtains for the windows. There he is, rocking in his chair. Now watch the porch step. It's busted. I guess we knock. It's polite.
What's it now?
Uncle Carew. It's me.
What you want?
Just to come in. I brought a visitor. An old friend of yours.
Come in. Sit where you like. Sit in my rocker. Nobody sits in it but me. Who's the man with you?
Don't you recognize him?
Looks like Pell boy.
That's who it is. Martin Pell.
He never was any good. Like you, Bliss. All right, you visited. Go on home now.
Kind of cold out. Give us a chance to warm up, huh?
I don't care what you do.
Just
dozing off a bit. Go on, Martin.
What?
He ain't looking this way. Now's the time.
I ain't gonna. He's an old man.
Give me the iron.
What are you...
Give it to me.
All right, here.
Yeah. Uncle. Uncle. Yeah. That'll be that, huh? Pockets. Yeah. Uncle was carrying quite a bit of dough on him. Martin. Here.
Huh?
Here, take the money. It's your payment.
No.
I'll put it in your pocket myself. That's very important. When they find you here, knocked out, tripping over that busted porch step, they'll know why you killed old man Carew.
What are you talking about?
Sure, and knowing your record, Martin, they'll never look for anybody else. Now, when they find you on the premises with the old man's dough in your pocket and your fingerprints on the tire iron...
No!
That's right.
I was walking up a long flight of stairs with nothing at the top but more stairs and more stairs, and my head was hurting. And then I woke up. Woke up lying outside of old man Carew's house with a blood-stained tire iron in my hand. I let go of it. I pulled myself to my feet. And then I heard cars. They were coming. And there I still was. I had to get away fast. I didn't know the country, but I was hunted. And a hunted animal's got an instinct to hide, to run, and to hide from the killers. They didn't find me that day because I fooled them. I didn't try getting out of the county, getting away from the town. Oh, no. That's where they were watching for me. So I stayed put close to town, which fooled them. And also, I had a job to do.
Who is it?
Martin. Me.
What are you doing here?
I got paid for a killing I didn't do. So I figured maybe I better do a killing now for no pay at all.
Stay where you are.
No, we're alone here. I got this knife.
No.
Bliss, you got a pencil?
A pencil? Yeah, sure.
Then sit down and write a little note about how you killed old man Carew.
No.
I got the knife against your heart. Sit down and write.
All right.
Well, just write. I killed my uncle because I wanted his money. You got it?
Yeah, I got it.
Now sign your name pretty.
I signed it. Take that knife away.
Sure. After I... Yeah. Goodbye, Mr. Bliss. Now, I better put the knife in your hand like this. Too bad your nerves went back on you. You committed suicide, Mr. Bliss. That's what you did. And now they'll stop looking for me. I holed in and waited until they found Bliss. So the law was called off. There was nobody to look for. So I headed for the water and stop and the freights because it was cold. And I was heading for sunshine. There was a train getting ready to head for the coast, so I sneaked close to it. On the far side, there was a couple of bulls around chewing the rag, but they didn't see me. I spotted an open boxcar and I climbed in. I got away from the door. The bulls were coming along checking. One of them sounded like the guy that had thrown me off the night before. Ah, this time I didn't care. I was hoping he'd lock the door on me. So I curled up in a corner and waited.
Yeah, Mac, that was quite a wreck they had up ahead. Quite a wreck. Held up the line for 24 hours. This freight here had already pulled out when word came in of the wreck up ahead, so they backed her right back here and let her stand. But she's on her way now. One of them sliding doors is open. Give me a hand with it.
Hey, wait, wait. Wait, if this is the same train... It can't be. This car. If it's the same train, this second would be over there. Let me see. The second. Yeah, it's the second. And under it, I gotta see. Yeah, it's him. Martin Pell. And I'm locked in with him. Me and Martin. The killers. We're going to the sunshine together. And that's how the cops will find us. Together. Him dead. And me. And me.
Well, well. Alas for poor Joe, who couldn't keep out of boxcars. He was a nice boy, but he couldn't stay put. I guess they'll give him the order of the Rolling Stone. Tombstone. And to leave you with a happy parting thought, whenever you hear a freight train whistling in the night, think of Joe and wonder, is he still in it with Martin? Rattling. Well, friends, it's time once again to close that creaking door. Until next week at this same time, when we'll be back with a little hunk of horror. You'll be sure to listen, won't you? Until next week, then. Good night. Pleasant dreams.
Inner Sanctum and the Switch, and that's from the Armed Forces Radio Service during World War II. You can hear there's no commercials in that program, so when you find out that there are no commercials and it runs about 24 minutes, then you're pretty sure that it's from the Armed Forces Radio Service. Next, we're going to have A Life in Your Hands. Don't know much about this show, but it's about actress Vicki Morley, and she is stabbed. And this is from 1949. My apologies, by the way, for the thumps in the start of the program, but they go away pretty soon.
Rolly Cigarettes present Earl Stanley Gardner's A Life in Your Hands. Did you hear him threaten her? What was the position of the body? Was she still alive at 8:30? Listen while we place A Life in Your Hands. Smokers, when you buy a pack of cigarettes, remember this. It pays two ways to smoke Raleigh's cigarettes. It pays with top-quality smoking enjoyment. It pays with luxury premiums. So get the pack with the premium coupon on the back. Raleigh's Cigarettes. You never know when you step from the safety of your home, when you may witness a violent death and be called upon to testify as to what you saw and heard, and suddenly find yourself with a life in your hands. Murder is a dark enigma that strikes fear into the heart of man. Strange, baffling, mysterious. But the darkest crime one man can invent, another man can unravel. And such a man is Jonathan Keg, created by Earl Stanley Gardner, the world's most popular writer of mysteries. Mr. Gardner is also creator of the famous Perry Mason, Doug Selby, and dozens of equally outstanding fictional characters. Jonathan Keg is a lawyer, but of a very special sort. When he appears in court, Jonathan Keg acts only in the capacity of amicus curiae. And here is Mr. Keg himself to tell you what that is.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
Mr. Keg, just what is meant by amicus curiae?
Translated from the Latin, amicus curiae simply means friend of the court. It refers to a lawyer or an expert who enters a case neither on behalf of the prosecution nor the defense. He acts impartially, seeking only the truth.
How does an amicus curiae go about finding the truth?
It is my belief that by cross-examination of witnesses, the truth can usually be learned.
And as amicus curiae, you conduct such cross-examination in the hope of seeing justice done?
Exactly. All we need is testimony from witnesses who remember what they hear. The basis of our system of justice is the ability of witnesses to relate accurately what they saw or heard. You never know when a crime is going to be committed. Even now, somewhere in the city, there may be a crime in the making.
Electrician?
I'm here, Miss Molly.
Ah.
But I guess there's nobody else in the theater. It's only about 4 in the afternoon. Anything I can do for you?
Well, then, who might you be? No, you might be all sorts of people. You might even be another bartender.
I'm Tom Kalish, Miss Molly, the new assistant stage manager. I just started today.
Fine. A career in the theater. I, Victoria Molly, have a career in the theater. You know that, did you?
Well, of course, Miss Molly.
I, Vicky Molly, am an actress. Worse, I'm married to an actor. The highly paid, thoroughly successful, extremely talented Mr. Peter Barnes is my husband and the star of the show. It's very good for Peter. Peter is starred. Victoria's featured. Do you know, are you aware, Mr.
Kalish.
Mr. Kalish, are you aware of the subtle distinction between a star and a feature player? Huh? Are you?
Well, yes, Miss Molly, but in this case,
All right. I'm embarrassing you. But it's something you'll just have to get used to. 3-4 days a week I come in like this. It's part of the plot. The lady drinks. But I have a way. I get around it. I come here to the theater early and nap. I nap it off, and by curtain time, I'm as good as new. Very simple, don't you think?
Miss Molly, I figure what other people do is their own business.
And you know something else? I've never missed a show, or an entrance, or even a cue. Never. Got an understudy. Pretty little tramp, Lucy Devereaux. Peter, my Peter, Mr. Barnes, he thinks very highly of her. As an actress, I tell myself. Yeah. But Lucy, my understudy, she's never had to go on for me, but never. Now, isn't that a shame? For Peter, isn't it?
Miss Marley, I'm brand new with the show. I...
Okay, I'm sorry. I know. This is talk, that's all. Do you know whether Charlie finished repainting the second act drop? He said he'd have it done in time for the show tonight.
The head stage manager, you mean? Yeah, Charlie wanted me to speak to you about that.
Don't tell me he forgot it again.
Well, he...
Oh, I told him at least a dozen. Have you seen the drop? I walk on, a blonde. The drop is about 3 shades lighter than my hair. It makes me look terrible. It's like a golden wall behind me.
That's what Charlie wanted me to tell you. He didn't forget, Miss Molly. Mr. Barnes told him not to repaint it, and the producer, Mr. Walters, okayed that.
But they what?
Well, Charlie said he was all set to go ahead when Mr. Barnes called him.
Well, we'll just see about this thing once and for all. Well, you got any change, Nichols?
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm, here.
Oh, thanks. Oh, here, keep it all.
Oh, no, just for a couple of nickels. That's crazy, Miss Marley.
I'll keep it. Hello, what's this about not repainting the second act drop? Don't now, Victoria, me. Why isn't it being repainted? You just try that. You just try putting me out of this show, you two-bit Casanova. I'll blow you and that cheap little Frank's reputation to pieces. No, no, I won't be reasonable about anything of the kind. You're trying to make a big splash with her. Don't lie about it. Forget it, baby. Just plain forget it. Before that girl takes over my part, I'll go to my grave.
Smokers, it pays two ways to smoke Raleigh cigarettes. It pays with top-quality smoking enjoyment. It pays with luxury premiums.
Yes, magnificent premiums, each the finest of its kind. Lovely Oneida community silverware. Handsome inlaid coffee tables by Castlewood. Gotham gold-striped nylon hosiery. Schick super-electric shavers and more than 50 others.
And you can have any of these beautiful premiums simply by saving the premium coupons you get with Raleigh cigarette. And remember,
Raleigh premiums are made possible by reduced advertising expenditures and by accepting a smaller profit than the usual rate for the cigarette industry. Thus, the Raleigh premium plan is a profit-sharing plan. Raleigh premiums are a bonus to the Raleigh smoker.
Yes, it pays two ways to smoke Raleigh cigarettes. It pays with top-quality smoking enjoyment. It pays with luxury premiums.
So get the pack with the premium coupon on the back. Raleigh cigarettes.
And now back to the theater. The echoing emptiness of the stage is now electric with the tension that comes just before curtain time.
3 minutes. 3 minutes. Curtain in 3 minutes. Mr. Barnes, 3 minutes. Mr. Barnes? That's funny. He's not...
If you're looking for Mr. Barnes, he's in his wife's dressing room down the hall.
Oh, thanks, Miss Devereaux. He's on in 3 minutes.
You'd better go and remind him then.
Yeah, I guess I had.
And don't let the Sound and Fury bother you. It's just Victoria giving him his nightly lecture.
Okay. 3 minutes. Curtain in 3 minutes. First act curtain going up in 3 minutes.
Don't give it to me. I can act rings around Devereaux, drunk or sober.
The last time when you lower your voice.
No, no, I won't lower my voice. I'll talk as loud
Mickey,
as
I swear, if you don't shut up.
3 minutes, Mr. Barnes. You're on in 3 minutes.
All right, Kalish. Thanks. I'll be down in just a minute.
They go for him, don't they, the audience?
They ought to. He's wonderful.
You've been with the show long, Miss Devereaux?
Since it opened last November.
Uh-huh.
For all the acting experience he's given me, I might just as well have stayed in Des Moines.
Yeah, I know. Miss Marley was telling me she's never missed a performance. Sort of tough in a way, huh?
I don't mind too much, but I can't see why Peter puts up with it. She's terrible.
Hello, Lucy.
Oh, Mr. Walters.
Hi. Where did you come from?
Can't a producer watch his own show?
Ah, Lucy, you're beautiful.
I love it.
I've been out front. How are things going back here, Kalish?
Just fine, Mr. Walters.
Like the show?
I think it's great.
And Peter Barnes, our star of stars?
Hey, he's got the stuff all right.
Yes, he has. I say, how's the house?
Not bad for a Monday.
The mezzanine's full up.
Fine, fine. Kalish, you'd better give Miss Marley a call. She's on shortly.
All right, Mr. Walters.
Oh, Si, give me a break. Oh, maybe she's asleep. I'm all ready to go on, please. Just this one.
Now, darling, be reasonable. I can't do that.
Please, Si?
Now you know it's out of the question. Come on, be sweet, darling. You'll get there on your own, Lucy. Don't bother with tricks.
Okay. I'll be sweet. You want me to call it?
Now, that's very sweet. Yes.
You'd better appreciate me.
I do. Very much.
She's a cute kid.
One of the cutest. One of the very cutest, Kalish.
That's Miss Devereaux.
In the name of heaven.
Nice. My good Lord, come and see. She's in there, sitting in a chair.
Who, Lucy?
Miss Marley. Somebody stabbed her.
Miss Marley?
There's a knife in her throat. Oh, Si, she's dead. She's dead.
Mr. Keg, I should begin this discussion by telling you that I am absolutely certain Peter Barnes did not kill his wife.
Very interesting, Mr. Walters.
As you know, they've brought an indictment against him, and the trial has been underway for a couple of days now. The prosecution is making a good case against him, but the charge is absolutely baseless.
Just what exactly do you want me to do, Mr. Walters?
I believe Vicky Marley committed suicide. But the police and the DA seem to have overlooked or at least discredited the possibility completely.
Did you suggest this theory to them?
Yes, and, well, they were very polite about it, but... Mr. Keg, I would like you to volunteer your services to the court as amicus curiae. And by examining all the evidence, I believe you can prove it was almost a physical impossibility for Peter Barnes to kill his wife.
Have you evidence to support that?
Yes. Peter is on stage during most of the show, especially the first and second acts. Vicky's body was discovered during the second act, while Peter was in plain sight of the audience.
Have you considered that he might have killed her between the first and second acts?
No, according to her maid, she was still alive when the second act curtain went up.
Have you considered that someone else may have killed her? Miss Devereaux, perhaps?
Yes. Yes, I have, but it doesn't add up. Lucy could have killed Victoria, but I can't think why. She had replaced Victoria, at least as an actress, in Peter's estimation, as well as my own.
I'll admit it presents a fascinating challenge, Mr. Walters.
And you may name your own fee, Mr. Keg.
No, Mr. Walters. Amicus Curiae will never accept a fee. I am particularly fortunate in that I'm financially secure. Therefore, I'm able to serve in that capacity and to indulge my passion for helping to see justice done.
Then you will do so in this case?
Remember, if I do offer my services to the court as amicus curiae tomorrow morning, my object will not be to prove that Peter Barnes didn't kill his wife. I shall seek only to uncover the facts and fit them together in a logical pattern, no matter whom it may help or hurt. Your Honor, it is my belief that the testimony, as so far presented, does not form a true picture of the facts. I respectfully request the court's permission to serve as amicus curiae, and in that capacity to cross-examine some of the witnesses.
Very well, Mr. Keg. Permission is granted.
Mr. Barnes, you say the last time you saw your wife alive was when you left her dressing room a minute or so before the first act began.
That's right.
It has been conclusively established that Miss Marley was still alive when the second act curtain went up. Would you mind telling me, Mr. Barnes, just how long you were on the stage during the second act prior to that point at which Miss Marley makes her entrance?
I go off just once. I'm supposed to make an exit onto a veranda. And then I reappear a few minutes later through a French door in the back wall of the stage.
How much time would you say elapses during that period?
As I say, a few minutes. I've never given it much thought.
I see. This letter opener with which your wife was stabbed, do you recognize it?
Yes. It's mine.
When was the last time you saw it?
I don't really remember. A few days ago in my dressing room, I think.
In your dressing room?
I think so.
Thank you, Mr. Barnes. That'll be all. Your Honor, I believe there are additional facts which have not been brought to light in the testimony so far. I understand that the entire cast and the people sitting in the front row of the audience have been subpoenaed and are here in court. I would like to talk with one of those people.
We will call to the stand any person you desire, Mr. Keg. And that person must testify.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ladies and gentlemen, few of us ever consider that we might at any moment be witness to a crime. The crimes of violence and passion that you read about in your newspapers are not committed in a vacuum. Much of the evidence which could solve them is frequently witnessed by many people. If you should be the one called upon to testify, as our next witness is about to do, you would surely have a life in your hand.
Smoke Raleigh's cigarettes, the pack with the premium coupon on the back. Because it pays two ways to smoke Raleigh's cigarettes. It pays with top quality smoking enjoyment. It pays with luxury premiums. And don't forget this.
We guarantee that no other cigarette gives you finer quality tobaccos than Raleigh. That no other cigarette is easier on your throat, richer tasting, more satisfying than Raleigh.
Yes, and Raleigh is the only popular brand of cigarette that gives you luxury premiums. And remember,
Raleigh premiums are made possible by reduced advertising expenditures and by accepting a smaller profit than the usual rate for the cigarette industry. Thus, the Raleigh Premium Plan is a profit-sharing plan. Raleigh premiums are a bonus to the Raleigh smoker.
That's why it pays two ways to smoke Raleigh cigarettes. It pays with top-quality smoking enjoyment. It pays with luxury premiums.
Smoke Raleigh cigarettes, the pack with the premium coupon on the back.
We return now to the courtroom where the well-known stage star, Peter Barnes, is on trial for the murder of his wife, Victoria Marley. Jonathan Keg, serving as amicus curiae, a friend of the court, is about to call his next witness from those members of the cast and theater audience who have been subpoenaed as witnesses. If you were this witness, you would have a life in your hands.
I would like to have Tom Kalish, the assistant stage manager, take the stand.
Tom Kalish appeared before you entered the case, Mr. Keg. He's already been sworn. Come forward, Tom Kalish.
Mr. Kalish, the court record shows that when you testified before, you told briefly about a quarrel you overheard between Mr. Barnes and Miss Marley. What were they quarreling about?
Well, first I heard Miss Marley yelling, "Don't give me that. I can act rings around Devereaux, drunk or sober." And then Mr. Barnes said something about lowering her voice. She said she wouldn't lower her voice, and then he said, "I swear, if you don't shut up..." And by then I was knocking on the door to give him his call. I didn't hear the end of what he said.
Did Mr. Barnes come to the door?
Yes, he did. And he said he'd be right down.
You saw him?
Yes.
Now, Mr. Kalish, I want you to consider this next question very carefully before answering it. How long was Mr. Barnes off the stage during the second act?
I'd say at least 4 minutes.
That's a very accurate estimate. Actually, Mr. Barnes, or rather the person who is now playing his part, he's off the stage for 4 minutes and 35 seconds. I clocked it at last night's performance. Mr. Kalish, Miss Devereaux has testified that she was the first to discover Miss Marley's body. In your own words, will you please tell the court exactly what you remember is taking place just before that discovery?
Well, Miss Devereaux and I were watching the show from the wings when Mr. Walters came in.
From where?
From out front, and he asked how things were going backstage and did I like the show.
Mr. Kalish, will you try to tell the court as nearly as you can the conversation that you and Miss Devereaux and Mr. Walters had at that time?
I'll try, Mr. Kalish.
Please do. Mr. Barnes' fate may depend on how well you remember it.
Well, let's see. Miss Devereaux and I both said hello to Mr. Walters. Then he said, sort of kidding, "Lucy, you're beautiful." And then he said to me, "I've been out front. How are things going back here?" And I answered that it was going all right.
Yes, go on.
And then Mr. Walters asked, "How's the house?" And Miss Devereaux and I both jumped in to answer that it was pretty full for Monday. And then Mr. Walters asked me to give Miss Marley a call because she was on pretty soon. And Miss Devereaux said, "Oh, give me a break, Si. Maybe she's sleeping. I'm all ready to go on." But Mr. Walters wouldn't go for that.
How do you mean, Mr. Kalish?
Well, he talked her out of it. Something about Miss Devereaux getting there on her own and not having to bother with tricks. So Miss Devereaux offered to call Miss Marley herself. And then a few seconds after she's gone, we heard her scream and she came running back crying and told us Miss Marley was dead.
I see. Earlier in your testimony, Mr. Kalish, you stated that Miss Marley made a phone call in your presence. Will you tell us about that?
Well, that afternoon when she came to the theater, she'd had a few drinks, like I said, and was kind of talkative. And after we'd got acquainted, she asked me if Charlie, he's a head stage manager, if he'd had a certain piece of scenery repainted that she wanted done. When I told her that Mr. Barnes had told Charlie not to repaint it, she blew up and called him on the telephone.
She called Mr. Barnes?
Why, yeah, I think it was him.
Did she address him by name?
No, but she bawled him out something awful.
Did you hear her place the call?
Yeah, I heard her dial a number.
Do you know what number she dialed?
No, sir, I had no way of knowing.
I understand. Now, is this phone she used a payphone?
Yes, it is. And she didn't have any change. She borrowed from me.
I see. She had to borrow a nickel from you to make the call.
Yeah, except it was two nickels she borrowed.
Two nickels? Did she make a second phone call at this time?
No, sir. She used both nickels on the same call.
You mean that before she dialed the number, she dropped two nickels into the payphone?
Yes, sir. I figured it was because she wasn't quite herself, you know.
I see. Can you remember what she said when the party at the other end of the line answered?
Well, like I say, she was sore as a boil, but she said, "Hello, what's this about not repainting the second act drop?" All at once in a big rush. And she said something about his being a two-bit Casanova and trying to put her out of the show. Oh, yeah, and she wound up by saying, "Before that girl takes over my part, I'll go to my grave." Then she hung up and walked down to her dressing room.
I want you to think carefully, Mr. Kalish. At any time during Miss Marley's phone conversation, did she ever explicitly address the person to whom she was talking as Peter or Mr. Barnes?
No. No, she didn't.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kalish. That'll be all. Your Honor, I would like to recall Mr. Cyrus Walters to the stand.
Very well, Mr. Keg. Mr. Walters will take the stand.
Mr. Walters, would you mind telling the court why you asked me to intercede in this case?
I ask you to offer your services to the court because, in my opinion, Miss Marley had not been murdered. I thought she committed suicide.
You thought she did? Don't you still think so?
I honestly don't know.
When you originally appealed to me to appear in court as amicus curiae, you stated that apart from your personal conviction of Peter Barnes' innocence, there was factual proof of it. Would you mind telling the court of what you felt that proof consisted?
Not at all, Mr. King. I told you that I regarded Peter's murdering Vicky as physically impossible. She was alive when the second act curtain went up. I thought Peter was on stage for all but a few moments of the second act, and I couldn't see how he could possibly have committed the crime. But now, in view of what evidence you've uncovered, I'm not so sure.
I am, Mr. Walters. I'm absolutely certain that Peter Barnes did not murder his wife.
Order! Order in the court, or I'll clear it at once.
Mr. Walters, this is one little drama you bungled very badly.
I don't know what you're talking about.
It's now a matter of court record that you, by your own testimony, requested me to determine whether or not Peter Barnes had sufficient time to murder his wife. But because you must have known, through your long association with the show, that he did have sufficient time to commit the crime, I can only assume that your intention was to ensure that point being brought out strongly in the court, thus strengthen the case against him. But that wasn't all you were after.
Now listen here,
King. You felt sure that Mr. Kalish, being new to the cast, would place great emphasis on the quarrel which took place immediately before the first curtain.
Well,
But you did not expect him to know about the telephone call Miss Marley made during the afternoon, because you didn't know he was at the theater early when Victoria Marley arrived.
You're crazy.
Furthermore, Mr. Kalish remembered quite a few things you said to him and Miss Devereaux.
I said nothing of any consequence.
Do you disagree with Mr. Kalish's account of the conversation that took place in the wings between you, Miss Devereaux, and himself?
Why,
Don't perjure yourself, Mr. Walters. Remember, Miss Devereaux was there, too.
All right. Kalish's account of what was said is, well, substantially true.
Really? Then would you please tell me, Mr. Walters, why, after having announced to Miss Devereaux and Mr. Kalish that you had, and I'm quoting you, come in from out front, why, a few moments later, you asked, "How's the house?" meaning the size of the audience.
Why, I often ask...
If you had been out front, as you stated, you would have certainly known the answer to that question. Was it because, while everyone else was watching the second act from backstage, you crossed behind the darkened set, entered Miss Marley's dressing room, and stabbed her to death?
Of course not! You're crazy, Kate! I had no motive for killing her!
Oh, yes, Mr. Walters, yes, you did. A twisted, futile motive, perhaps, but motive enough for you. It was Lucy.
Shut up!
Lucy Devereaux, the one girl you couldn't...
Will you shut up?
The one girl you didn't want as a hand-me-down from Peter Barnes. And it was the phone call Victoria Marley made to you in the afternoon that first put the idea in your head. It wasn't Peter she called, was it, Mr. Walters? Not with two nickels. His phone number carries a local exchange. So it must have been a toll call to a suburban home, to a house like the one you own in Floral Heights. It was that phone call that decided you. So you conceived an elaborate plan for getting Lucy the role you'd promised her and eliminating Peter in the same stroke by seeing him convicted of his wife's murder.
Keg,
Did Miss Devereaux know you were in love with her?
I... All right. Yes. Yes, she did. I'd ask her to marry me a number of times, but it was always Peter. Peter, I like you a lot, Cy, and maybe if it weren't for Peter, everything he is, everything he says, every clever mannerism he has, I gave them to him. It drove me crazy that she was so blind to it, that she couldn't see that he was nothing but a puppet.
And Victoria Marley, is she another one of your puppets, Mr. Walters?
No, no, that was different. I didn't want to kill Vicky.
But you couldn't think of an easier way. One that would end things so tidily and with all your characters just where you'd planned. So you fell back on an old stage trick. You killed one of them off.
But I didn't want to.
As cold-bloodedly as you'd snip the strings of a marionette, you walked into Victoria Marley's dressing room and murdered her.
It was all I could think to do.
Yes, I guess it must have been, Mr. Walters. But certainly, if you had foreseen how the play would end, I doubt that you would have included that situation.
Thank you, Jonathan Keg. May I ask you now to tell us something about next week's show?
Inasmuch as no man can predict the future, Mr. Wallace, I honestly can't tell you just where we'll find ourselves next week. Whether it be in the criminal court, a coroner's inquest, or judge's chambers, I shall again offer my services as amicus curiae.
Friends, here's a cordial invitation for each of you to be with us next Tuesday when you will again hear Jonathan Keg, created by Earl Stanley Gardner, author of the internationally famous Perry Mason stories and many others. Smokers, send for your free copy of the Raleigh Premium Catalog. More than 50 luxury premiums are pictured in full color. Just write, Raleigh's, Hollywood, California.
Pipe smokers, you'll like Sir Walter Raleigh pipe tobacco.
You'll like the rich, full-bodied flavor of Sir Walter Raleigh, never bitter, never biting.
You'll like the way Sir Walter Raleigh smokes cool, clean, never leaves a soggy heel in your pipe, just a nice dry ash.
And you'll like that grand aroma of Sir Walter Raleigh. You and your pipe will be welcome everywhere.
Yes, men, you'll like everything about Sir Walter Raleigh. It's the quality pipe tobacco of America.
A Life in Your Hands is created by Earl Stanley Gardner with script by John Kelly. The program is produced by Jack Simpson, directed by Homer Heck. Jonathan Keg is played by Ned Lefebvre. This is Myron Wallace inviting you to be with us again next week when Raleigh Cigarettes, the pack with the coupon on the back, will again place A Life in Your Hands.
This is NBC, the national broadcasting company.
A Life in Your Hands, and that was written by Earl Stanley Gardner, the same person who wrote Perry Mason, both on radio and the television series. Next, we have the Harold Perry Show. And for those of you who are OTR collectors and fans, you may remember that Harold Perry was the original Great Gildersleeve. But there was a contractual problem, and that program was taken over by another person who sounded exactly like Harold Perry. That left Harold Perry with time on his hands and no show. So he went ahead and made the Harold Perry Show. This is from 1950, and Cousin Raymond comes to visit.
The Harold Perry Show. And now, Harold Perry as Honest Harold the Homemaker. Well, there's a lot of hustle and bustle in the Honest Harold household this morning. This is the day Harold's young cousin Raymond from Chicago is arriving for a visit. Right now, Harold and his mother are busily straightening up the living room, assisted by their friend Dr. Yancey, the veterinarian.
There. I think the sofa looks better over here.
It'll hide that spot on the rug, Mother.
It looks fine, Harold.
Harold, why don't you move this Morris chair back against the wall?
I will, Doc, if you'll get out of it.
Oh, all right.
It's going to be wonderful having Cousin Raymond here. And it was awfully nice of you to give up your bedroom, Harold.
Oh, that's all right, Mother. Raymond will only be here for a week or two, just for his vacation. We want to do everything we can to make him comfortable.
I hope you won't be uncomfortable sleeping on the sofa.
Well, Harold can wear his heavy PJs so the horsehairs won't give him nightmares.
Oh, brother.
When did you see the boy last, Mother Ham?
Oh, it's nearly 10 years now. He was such a sweet little boy. Such a young gentleman.
Yeah, well, don't forget he's not a boy anymore, Mother. He's been out of college 3 years.
What did he do?
Oh, he's a real go-getter, Doc. The day after that boy graduated from college, he got a job in one of those big advertising agencies in Chicago. I imagine he's a big executive by now.
Yeah, probably wears a belt and suspenders at the same time.
Say, that must be Raymond, Mother.
Uh-oh, I'm going out the back way. Meeting my own relatives is bad enough. Our reservoir.
Oh, dear. You go to the door, Harold. I want to get out of this apron.
Yeah, all right, Mother. Feel a little nervous. Meeting a big Chicago executive. Maybe I ought to put on my Homburg hat. Say, there's a taxi in front. Cousin Raymond certainly does things in style. Well, Cousin Raymond.
Well, Cousin Harold, fancy meeting you here.
Huh? I live here. Oh, a joke. Hey, won't you come in?
Oh, thanks. Oh, there's one little detail. Have you got $2 handy?
$2?
For the taxi.
Oh, yes. Here.
Thanks. Oh, you got another dollar?
Another dollar?
Yeah, I'm a heavy tipper.
Oh.
Thanks. I'll be right back.
That's funny. He didn't have $3. Well, he's probably got his money all tied up in traveler's checks.
Well, it's sure nice to be here, cuz.
Cuz? Oh, well, we're sure glad to have you here, Raymond. Here, let me take one of your suitcases.
Okay. It might be easier for you to carry both of them.
Huh?
One will balance the other.
Oh, well. Never thought of that. Heavy. Must have his traveler's checks in him. Mother will be right in, Raymond. She's primping up a little bit. Sit down. Take the Morris chair.
Oh, no thanks, cuz. I'll just stretch out here on the sofa. Conserve my energy.
Guess all big executives do that.
There. Oh, cuz, would you mind putting that pillow under my head?
Of course.
Thanks. That's fine.
He's really conserving his energy. Well, tell me, Cousin Raymond, how are things in the ad game?
The what?
Oh, you know, that big advertising company you work for in Chicago.
Oh, I haven't worked for them for 3 years.
But I thought you started there 3 years ago.
That's right. I only worked there one day.
One day?
Yeah, the boss wouldn't give me the afternoon off, so I quit.
Well, I see. Cousin Raymond, what have you been doing these last 3 years?
Loafing.
Loafing? But you said in your letter that you were coming here for a vacation.
Yeah, I needed a change. I got tired of loafing in Chicago.
You did, eh? But Raymond, you want to make a living, don't you?
Not as long as I can live off of somebody else.
Wonder who he means.
Well, if it isn't little Cousin Raymond.
Oh, hello, Aunt Emily.
Gee, he got up.
Oh, you must be tired after your trip. Why don't you lie down again?
All righty.
He did.
Aunt Emily, let me look at you.
What?
Why, it's remarkable. I haven't seen you for 10 years and you're still as attractive as ever.
Oh, you.
Oh, brother. What an operator.
Well, Raymond, so this is my hard-working young nephew.
Yeah, that's what she thinks.
Oh, it's so nice having you here. I'm sorry you can only stay for 2 weeks.
Mother.
Why, we wish you could stay a year.
But, Mother, Raymond can't stay too long. He only brought 2 suitcases. Who's that?
Oh, that must be the man with my trunk.
Your trunk?
Yeah, I thought I'd bring it just in case he wanted me to stay longer.
Oh, I'm so glad, Raymond.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, I'll see about my trunk and, cuz, you got another $3?
Of course he has.
You better make it 4. You know, I'm a heavy tipper.
Heavy tipper, yeah. Here,
Hope you won't mind those old dusty bills.
Thanks, cuz.
Oh, Harold, isn't it wonderful? Raymond is going to be with us for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Mother, I'm home.
Why, Harold, it's only 3 o'clock.
Yeah, I've got some work to do. You know, I'm chairman of the Safer Driving Committee. I have a report to get out for tonight's meeting.
Oh, well, you can work in the living room. It'll be nice and quiet in there.
Thanks, Mother. What's Cousin Raymond been doing?
Well, he's been lying down on the sofa all morning.
Oh? Where is he now?
He's lying down in your room.
Oh, my goodness. Is that all he's been doing all day, lying down?
Oh, no. No, he got up for lunch.
I'll bet he did. Mother, Raymond is the laziest fellow I've ever known.
Now, Harold, maybe he just hasn't found himself yet.
All he has to do is look on the nearest sofa. Well, better get my report started. Little Gloria's coming over from the radio station to type it up for me.
Oh, that's nice.
Mm-hmm. Well, better get on with my report. Let's see. I'll start at something like this. Ladies and gentlemen of the Safer Driving Committee, as your... Oh, my goodness, what's that? Mother?
Yes, Harold?
What's that noise?
Oh, that's Raymond practicing on his saxophone.
Oh, my goodness.
He says he's planning to have his own orchestra someday.
Oh, what an orchestra that'll be. Reclining Raymond and his sleepy six. where was I? Oh, yes. Ladies and gentlemen, we must all... Oh, that did it. I'm going to have a talk with that boy. Look at him on the bed. Even plays the saxophone lying down.
Hiya, cuz.
Cuz? I mean Raymond. I want to talk to you.
Okay. Shoot.
Don't tempt me. Raymond, I'm a little older than you are, and I think I know a little more about life.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to tell you the story of the grasshopper and the ant. Once upon a time, there was a very lazy grasshopper who slept all day. Well, a hard-working ant... Raymond, will you please open your eyes?
Huh? Oh, sure.
Thank you. Now, you've been out of college 3 years, and you've worked one day. I mean, half a day. And, Raymond, you can't go through life without working.
Why?
Why? Well, think of all the things you miss when you don't work. The thrill of a job well done. The respect of your fellow man. Then there's the question of women.
Women?
He sat up.
You know some women?
Raymond, lie down. I was about to say, someday you'll want to settle down, get married. But you have to be in a position to support a wife first.
Uh-huh.
Now, just suppose you met some beautiful young girl, Raymond, tonight. Why, you wouldn't know what to do.
That's what you think.
Huh?
Just lead me to her, cuz.
Eh? Raymond, that'll do. Oh, my goodness. The point I'm trying to make is, women respect men who are ambitious, my boy. For instance... There's a young lady coming over here in a little while who, well, who thinks quite a bit of me. And you know why? Because I'm industrious, serious-minded. Why, she wouldn't look twice at a man who's frivolous. There she is now. Now, just think over what I said, young man. And remember, to get any place in this world, you've got to be ambitious, alert, wide awake.
Okay, cuz.
Oh, my goodness. What a boy. He's like those new cars, completely shiftless.
Hello, Harold. Here's little old Gloria right on the dot.
Hello, Gloria. Come on in.
Okay.
Certainly nice of you to come over and help me with my report on your afternoon off.
Oh, you know that I'm always glad to help you, Harold. And I think it's just wonderful that you've been made chairman of the safety campaign committee.
It wasn't much, Gloria. Guess they just thought I was the best man for the job.
You always say the cutest things, Harold. And a girl just has to admire a man like you. Hard-working, public-spirited.
That's just what I was trying to tell somebody. Well, shall we get started on the report?
All right. What's that?
That's my cousin Raymond from Chicago. Just a callow youth, Gloria. You wouldn't be interested in him.
Oh?
Oop, here he comes.
Hiya, cuz.
Oh,
hello, Raymond.
Hey, who's the babe?
Yep. This happens to be Miss Gloria O'Day, who's employed at our radio station. And she doesn't care to be called babe.
Oh, I think it's cute.
What?
Hi, Raymond.
Hiya, babe.
Oop. Now, look here, babe. I mean Gloria. Let's get down to work, shall we?
Yeah, go right ahead. You won't bother me. I'll just lay right here on the sofa.
I hope the horsehair tickles him silly. All right, Gloria. Take a letter. That is, take a report.
Yes, sir.
Ladies and gentlemen of the Safer Driving Committee, as your chairman, I am proud to report...
Say, cuz...
What is it?
You didn't tell me you had such beautiful girls in Melrose Springs. Why, Gloria's the cutest babe I've seen in a long time.
Why, thank you, Raymond.
Gloria, where did we leave off?
As your chairman, I am proud to report that I'm the cutest baby seen in a long time.
Gloria?
Raymond, you don't really mean that. Why, I bet the girls in Chicago are a lot cuter than I am.
I bet they're not.
I bet they are.
I bet they're not.
I bet they are.
I bet they're not.
Cut that out!
Well, I guess I'll go out and look your little burg over.
It's a good idea. Take that saxophone with you. Goodbye, Raymond.
It's too bad you can't go with me, Gloria. We could have a lot of fun. We could get a soda, go to the movies.
Raymond, you're just wasting your time. Gloria's not interested in having a good time when she has work to do. Of course, Gloria, if I thought you were the kind of girl who wanted to fritter away the afternoon with Raymond, I'd be the first to say, go ahead. I'd even let you use my Essex. Why, you could joyride with Raymond all afternoon.
Oh, thank you, Harold.
Huh?
Oh, come on, let's go, Raymond.
Sure, nice of you, cuz. The car keys, please.
The car keys? Oh, sure. And maybe you'd like me to give you $4 for gasoline.
You better make it $5.
I know you're a heavy tipper.
Well, so long, cuz, and don't forget the story of the grasshopper and the ant.
Grasshopper and the ant. I think I'll find a good, hard-working ant and punch him right in his antenna.
We will return for the second act of our story, Honest Harold, in just a moment. Tonight on CBS, Dick Powell joins Bing Crosby for some singing. So for a half hour of grand hilarity and wonderful songs, don't miss Dick Powell's visit to the Bing Crosby Show later tonight. The Bing Crosby Show is heard every Wednesday on most of these same CBS stations. And now, back to Honest Harold, the homemaker. Well, we find Honest Harold a little upset this afternoon. He has a new problem. His lazy young cousin, Raymond, who has moved in for a long stay.
That's what he thinks.
So far, Harold's attempts to change Raymond from a carefree grasshopper into a hard-working ant have been completely unsuccessful.
I got 15 more minutes.
Right now, our frustrated reformer is on his way to seek advice from his friend, Doc Yancey, the veterinarian.
I don't know what's going to happen to that Raymond. He can't just go through life without working, I don't think. He's a real problem, all right. Maybe old Doc Yak Yak will have an idea.
Yeah, come in.
Hello, Doc.
Oh, close that door, quick, Harold.
What?
Close the door, there's a draft.
Okay.
I'm giving this Pekingese a bath. I don't want the dear little thing to catch cold. He's a princess, you know.
Princess?
Are you warm enough, Princess Lotus Blossom? Gesundheit, Your Highness.
Oh, my Gesundheit. Doc, I want to talk to you.
Don't shout, Harold. You're in the presence of royalty.
Royalty? What am I supposed to do, bow?
Did Doc get that nasty old soap in your eyes? Were he sorry?
Oh, right. Doc?
We're all through, Princess. Now, come on, slip into your little bathrobe. That's it.
Bathrobe. And it's got a royal crest on it.
Now, I'll put you there by the heater. Now, Harold, what can I do for you?
Well, I've forgotten now.
Oh, how's your cousin?
That's it. I'm having a little trouble with him, Doc.
What seems to be wrong with that young advertising genius?
Genius? Do you know how long he lasted on that job, Doc? One day. He hasn't worked for 3 years. He just wants to loaf his life away.
Hey, that's bad, all right. Somebody's got to work in this world. We can't all be politicians.
Doc, I'm worried about the boy, really. I tried to talk to him, but it didn't do any good.
It seems to me, Harold, what this young fella needs is a horrible example.
What do you mean?
Well, if we could just show him somebody who loafed his life away and came to a bad end, that might throw a scare into him.
Hey, that sounds good, Doc. What horrible example do we know?
Well, remember Droopy Johnson?
Uh-huh.
Slept in class all through high school. They had to wake him up to give him his diploma. What became of him?
He's vice president of a bank in Cleveland.
We couldn't use him, could
yeah,
we?
Yeah, no.
Harold, I got an idea.
You have?
Suppose we get someone to impersonate a human wreck. You know, the tail end of a misspent life.
Well, then, who could we get?
Well, it'd take a great actor, Harold. Uh-huh. Someone with the combined talents of Spencer Tracy and, Sonny Tufts.
Doc, where are we going to find a talented actor in Melrose Spring? Doc, you don't mean...
Yeah?
Oh, no.
I never told you this, Harold, but I took the lead in the senior class play in veterinary college.
Thank you very much, Doc.
Now, wait a minute. I played a part just like this. You see, I was a young English lord who became a waster, you know. And in the third act, I was just a broken shell of a man reduced to begging on the streets of London.
Doc, please.
I'll never forget my big scene. It was wonderful. I shambled up to a well-dressed man and I said, "Hi, sorry, Governor. Could you spare a tuppence or a threepence for a bloke who's down on his luck?"
Doc.
"Yes, sir, Governor. I've had me hoops and downs, downs and hoops, hoops and downs."
Doc, stop. Wait a minute.
"Oh, I see that sneer on your face, Governor. I know what you're thinking, but it's all right.
No.
I was once a gent like you. But look at me now. I'm just a bit of flotsam and jetsam, reduced to cadging for a spot of tea and a dab of marmalade to keep body and soul together. I'm hungry, Governor. I'm hungry."
Okay, Doc. Here's a quarter. Get yourself a nut burger. Goodbye. Doc was certainly a big help. I say, Governor, could you spare a tuppence? I've seen better acting than that on television. Well, maybe I'm just worrying too much about Cousin Raymond.
Kemp?
Uh-oh, Prissy Pants Peabody. I suppose he'll be worse than ever now that he got elected mayor.
Kemp, I want to talk to you.
Hey, all right, Stanley.
I prefer to be called by my official title, Mayor Peabody.
Oh, brother.
In case you've forgotten, I defeated you in the recent election.
I hate him.
Kemp, I understand the last mayor was foolish enough to appoint you chairman of the Safer Driving Committee.
Yes, he was. I mean, yes, he did.
You're a fine chairman.
Well, thank you.
I don't mean that. An hour ago, I saw your car hurtling down Main Street 45 miles an hour in a 15-mile zone.
An hour ago? Ooh, I wasn't driving the car.
Oh, I suppose your car was being driven by a robot.
No, a Raymond.
What?
They don't make them anymore. Just skip it.
You were driving that car, Hemp. Now, don't try to crawl out of it.
Stanley, did you ever try to crawl out of an Essex? Besides, I wasn't in it. Now, listen to me, Stanley.
Not Stanley. You know what to call me.
Brother, I sure do.
And if I see you speeding just once more, there'll be a new chairman of the Safety Driving Committee.
But
acting as though you weren't driving the car.
But your mayorship,
Hemp. You'll have to get up pretty early in the morning to make a fool of me.
All right, I'll set the alarm. When is that boy gonna bring my car home? It's 8 o'clock.
Why, Harold, shouldn't you be leaving for your safety committee meeting?
I intend to leave, Mother, as soon as Raymond brings back the Essex.
Wait till I get my hands on him.
No, Harold, you mustn't be too hard on Raymond. He may be a little young and mixed up, but I have the feeling that boy is going far.
Well, he doesn't have to go in my Essex. No use waiting for Raymond any longer, Mother. I'm late now. I'll walk to the meeting.
All right.
Kind of cold out tonight, though. I think I'll wear my overcoat.
Oh, I forgot to tell you, Harold. Raymond dropped by this afternoon and borrowed it.
Borrowed my overcoat? Oh, my goodness, it's a wonder he didn't take my muffler, too.
He did.
Goodbye, Mother.
Goodbye, Harold, and good luck on your report. Yeah,
thank you. That Raymond has certainly got his nerve. Speeding around town all day, joyriding with Gloria. Now I'm going to be late for my meeting.
Hey, you want a lift, Buster?
Raymond!
Take you someplace, cuz?
Well, you can drive me to my committee meeting if it isn't too much trouble.
Oh, no trouble at all. Hop in, cuz.
Thank you.
Where to, Jack?
What happened to cuz? I want to go to the city hall and drive slowly.
Oh, sure. How's this?
You've been very inconsiderate, young fella. I don't suppose it occurred to you that I might want to use my own car.
Oh, sorry, cuz. I didn't realize it was so late. We've been over to Gloria's house listening to records.
It must have been the long playing kind. You might be interested to know, Raymond, that because of your thoughtfulness, I'm going to be late for my meeting tonight.
You're going to be late? Well, why didn't you say so?
What?
Here, I'll just have you there in a jiffy.
Raymond, you're speeding. Raymond, slow down.
We're only doing 50, cuz.
But that's dangerous. It says so right here in my report. Ooh, look out for that corner.
Hang on, cuz. Well, we made it on two wheels.
I thought we left the ground. Raymond, you'll get arrested for this. They'll take away your driver's license.
They can't do that. I haven't got one.
No, man, you stop this car immediately. Do you hear me? Or I'll send you back to Chicago.
Hey, cuz.
That was a foolhardy thing to do, Raymond. I'm at the end of my patience with you. Now, you get out from behind that wheel. I'll drive myself.
Okay.
Going 50 miles an hour on Heliotrope Drive. You're just lucky the police didn't see us speeding that way.
I got news for you, cuz. They did.
Huh?
And here they come now. I'll see you later.
Raymond, you come back here. Oh, brother, it's Pete the Marshal.
Well, going to a fire, Harold?
Oh, hello, Pete. You gave me quite a chase, boy.
Pete, look, I can explain all this.
That's what they all say.
Pete, you know me. I'm against speeding. My cousin was driving.
Your cousin was driving, huh? Well, I gotta hand it to you, Harold. I never heard that alibi before.
But, Pete...
You know, usually the fella says he's rushing to the hospital because his wife is having a baby. Yeah, my goodness, if that baby story was true every time I heard it, the population of this town would be tripled by now.
But, Pete, really, this is the truth.
Then there was a fella I picked up who went through a stop sign one time. Had two ladies crowded in the front seat with him. Said the reason he didn't stop was because he was too modest to reach over and shift the gear. Ain't that a doozy? Of course, they can't use that one anymore. The gear shift is obsolete in most
Pete,
cars.
Pete, you've got to believe me. My young cousin was driving this car.
Where is he now, boy? Hiding in the glove compartment?
Yes.
Your cousin was driving the car, huh? Well, I declare, Harold, I'm afraid I'll have to make out a speeding ticket.
You're certainly happy about it.
Yes. Let me see your driver's license.
Driver's license? Well, let's see here. Got it right in my... put it in my overcoat yesterday. And Raymond's got my overcoat.
Who is Raymond, boy?
My cousin.
Oh, the fella in the glove compartment.
Oh, what's the use? I just hope reclining Raymond is home. Got a few things to say to little old cuz. Felt like a fool at that meeting tonight, making a report on safe driving with a speeding ticket in my pocket. Well, Raymond has taken advantage of me for the last time. I'm going to request that he return to Chicago. My mind is made up. I'll go in his room and have it out with him right now.
Can
Raymond?
Hello.
Raymond, I'm a patient man, but I can be pushed too far. And after what you've done tonight, I think it would be much better for all of us if you... Why have you got that suitcase on your bed?
I've been packing.
Packing?
Yeah, I'm going back to Chicago. There's a train tonight.
Oh. Well, it's kind of late, Raymond. Why don't you wait and leave tomorrow?
No, I think I better leave now. I've been nothing but trouble to you.
Well...
You've been very patient with me, Harold, but I'm really not worth it. I'm everything you said. I'm lazy, irresponsible. I guess I'll be a failure all my life.
Oh, I wouldn't say that, Raymond. You're young yet.
I don't know what's the matter with me. I've been sitting here trying to figure it out. I guess the reason I act the way I do is because, well, maybe I'm a little scared of life.
Well, Raymond, I guess all of us are a little scared of life at times.
Oh, I wanted to tell you before I leave, Cousin Harold, I went to see the marshal. I told him I was driving your car.
You did?
Yeah, and I told him I'd pay the fine out of my own pocket. I'm going to send him $2 a week.
Well, that shows you do have a sense of responsibility, Raymond, and I'm proud of you.
Well, thanks. Goodbye, Harold.
Raymond.
Yes?
Why don't you stay?
Do you really want me to?
Sure.
Oh, thanks. You're a swell guy.
Oh, yeah.
Well, if I'm going to stay, I'd better make the first payment on my fine tomorrow.
Oh, that's good, Raymond.
Can you let me have $2, cuz?
Raymond? Oh, well, what the heck. Here's the $2. Wait a minute. I'll make it $3. I'm a heavy tipper, too.
You have just heard the Harold Perry Show, Honest Harold, who returns in just a moment with an important announcement. The supporting players tonight included Jane Morgan, Gil Stratton Jr., Ken Peters, and Parley Bayer, and featured Gloria Holliday as Gloria and Joseph Kearns as old Doc Yak Yak. Norman McDonald directed, and the music was composed and conducted by Jack Meekin. Honest Harold, created by Harold Perry, was written by Gene Stone, Jack Robinson, and Bill Danch. Now back to Harold Perry.
Well, Bob, I just wanted to say that the Honest Harold Laugh Contest is over, and the National Laugh Champion will be announced next week. 170 cities throughout the country send in their entries, and the judges are now deciding the winner. The lucky lady will be flown to Hollywood via TWA for a week's vacation, and she'll appear with us on the Harold Perry Show while she's here. So I'll see you next week, folks. Good night.
Now stay tuned for the Bing Crosby Show, which follows immediately over most of these same CBS stations. Bob Luman speaking. This is CBS, where you thrill to suspense on Thursday nights. The Columbia Broadcasting System.
Once again, it's time to go, but we'll be back next week with some of the best old-time radio you can hope to hear, and I hope you're here to hear it. Till then, this is Jim.